Sai's Glory, His Divine Story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Om Shri Sai Ram. Nobel laureate and Indian poet Sri Rabindranath Tagore says, and I quote him, "When thou commandest me to sing, it seems that my heart would break with pride, and I look at thy face and tears come to my eyes. All that is harsh and dissonant in my life melts into one sweet harmony, and my adoration spreads wings like a glad bird on its flight across the sea. I know thou takest pleasure in my singing. I know that only as a singer I come before thy presence. I touch by the edge of the far-spreading wing of my song thy feet, which I could never aspire to reach. Drunk with joy of singing, I forget myself and call thee friend who art my Lord." Unquote. Loving salutations at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, who is our revered Lord and our dearest, closest friend, the love of our lives, the wind beneath our wings, the beat of our hearts, the rhythm of the universe, and the current that keeps it in motion, alive to the minutest atom. Glory be to Lord Sai, who is the voice, the ears, the heart and soul of Radio Sai. At His divine lotus feet, we bow over and over again. Sai Ram, dear listeners, good morning and welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. You're tuned to our Asia stream, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. My name is Karuna and I thank you so very much for staying with us on Thursday, June the 25th, 2015. The time in the ashram right now is exactly 41 minutes past 9 a.m., Indian Standard Time. Current weather conditions in Prashanthi Nilayam, 25 degrees Celsius with daytime highs of 33 and overnight low of 22. Overall, easy, breezy and so very pleasant and pleasing is this slice of heaven right now. And might I remind you, dear listeners, we are waiting for you to come home to Prashanthi Nilayam soon. If you think you need a spiritual recharge, a calming of the mind and a super dose of peace and bliss, Prashanthi is the place to head to, dear sisters and brothers. So today on Morning Glory, I'm delighted to bring you a brand new episode of our occasional series, Learning with Love, with Mr. John Moore of the United States of America. This interview is uniquely inspiring and insightful, and I hope you will stay with us on Morning Glory to enjoy it. But first, I have lined up a special musical treat for you. So the conversation with Mr. John Moore will be preceded by some musical delight to put you in a perfect frame of mind to receive the lessons of love that Baba has in store for you today. The recital that I'm about to play has been put together by Sai University alumni who came all the way from Chennai to Radio Sai last month and recorded this for us. And will you believe it, dear sisters and brothers, if I told you that two of these amazing instrumentalists, Sri Manikrishna and Sri Neelakantan, are self-taught. They learned the Mohan Veena, which is also known as the slide guitar, and the flute, respectively, during their university years at Baba's institution without a formal music teacher. So please enjoy the instrumental rendition of a very popular and much loud bhajan, Govinda Bolo, Gopal Bolo, with Sri Manikrishna, A. Manikrishna on the slide guitar, Mr. P.R. Neelakantan on the flute, and Mr. Giridharan Subramanyam on the tabla. This will be followed by today's feature presentation, the Learning with Love interview with Mr. John Moore. Dear brothers and sisters, it is now time to delight your senses with some sublime music and then enjoy this deeply moving conversation. Have a listen, please. Dear listeners, this is Karuna Munshi and I'm delighted to welcome you to our occasional series, Learning with Love. Learning with Love is a variant of our Tris with Divinity conversations with a value-added component, making it Trist with a Twist. In these interviews, Baba's devotees from around the world will speak of the lessons they have learned from their association with Baba. And in sharing these lessons, they will bring to life some of the experiences that delivered what are now their mantras for life. Sharing his learning with love today is Mr. John Moore. And we are recording this episode of Learning with Love with Mr. John Moore on the 9th of January 2015. Sairam, Brother John, and welcome to Learning with Love on Radio Sai.
Sairam, and thank you for inviting me. I'm honored.
And so are we to have you in the studio, John. Now, let me begin by asking you, you have such a long and profound relationship with Baba, and every time I've spoken to you away from the microphone, I see you really practice this teaching of Baba to be in the moment. Everything is now. So would you like to share the lesson of what you described as another name for God is now? That's such a profound lesson. Would you like to elaborate on that, John?
I'm touched, and I really think for me, this is one of my favorite names of God, is now. Because as Swami tells us all to love all, serve all, we can only do that in this moment right now. And even that moment that I just spoke of is gone, and this new now comes. And that one's gone, and I can love now. And so it's, as he said, it's not, when we live the present, it's not just any present, but the omnipresent. Because as Swami does this, he sees every now, where we live in a linear fashion, moving from one now to the next. And if we can just only live more and more in the present, this moment right now, then there's no problems, because everybody's problems are past and future. They bring these things that don't exist to this moment. Instead of being able to love right now, they think of some future time that they need to worry about.
Like having to pay a bill, as you said.
Yes, or, you know, dragging yesterday here where I stepped on somebody's toe and what can I do to fix it? Well, when I think that each moment presents itself, and when that moment comes that you can rectify an error or make some money to pay that rent in 3 weeks, that can only happen right now. And for me, this is what it comes back to, because in our fear of what will be, we forget that right now we can love. I don't know how to say it more succinct than that. For me, everything comes back to this, thank you, Baba. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows me for saying thank you, Baba, because I'm just so grateful. And people say, well, in living this now, how do you do that? And for me, it's like the Native American Indian elders, the Hopi Indians, they informed me that right now is a time to get rid of one word from your mind, your heart, and your vocabulary.
Which is?
Get rid of the word struggle and replace it with the word celebrate.
Oh, what a beautiful thought.
Well, and people say, well, you know, how do you do that? And I say, well, if Swami gives you darshan, celebrate it. And if he says, clean the toilet, celebrate it. It must be a need for your spiritual growth or he wouldn't give it to me. And so that's living in the now, taking whatever that moment gives and not seeing it as a difficulty or a problem, but how does this relate to me and my guru and God? And he's giving me something in this moment right now. Only thing is, before I was born, I made a contract that he would give me only that which will bring me spiritual progress. So this new now, like I said, whether he gives darshan or says clean the toilet, I say, Swami, remind me, what's the spiritual reason for this? And then instead of two things, this duality of right and wrong or do it, don't do it, good, bad, it comes to a singular value of right in this now, right now, I need more love, or I need more forgiveness, or I need more, whatever that singular value is back in the heart and on my spiritual path. The other is of the mind. And the mind's, like Swami always said, it's a mad monkey. It's jumping from one thing to another.
Now, John, this sounds fantastic, what you're saying, and it's the kind of stuff I would read in a book. Now, in a real-life situation, let's say if I had an unpleasant experience this morning and somebody yelled or shouted at me and I also raised my voice and had an argument or a disagreement, and now I'm struggling to calm myself down and feel like normal and whole again without feeling the disturbance in my mind, how do I celebrate this altercation, this disturbance, instead of struggling with my thoughts, constantly taking my mind down to Swami and being in the moment?
Well, first of all, I have to say that Swami has said that the best guru for you is you. Mm-hmm. Find your path of how to do this. But what I try to do is, with Swami's grace, I'm able to stop myself a moment, just a moment, and say, Swami, with all this going on, what's the spiritual reason that this has come about? And then, it comes back to a singular value of, well, right now you need more forgiveness, you need more patience, you need more love, you need more peace, whatever that interaction is. Because what you're addressing also deals with the now that we talked about a minute ago. You see, when I first came to Swami, I had more anger than any 10 people you've ever met put together. And Swami took this from me in a moment. And I realized that a lot of this anger was because it's a lust that I didn't get a reaction, an action, something back from what I put in. Whether, like your example, when you have an argument with somebody, it's because we don't see things the same way. But as Swami said, celebrate the diversity, but see the unity in the diversity. So that means to me that I need to allow you to have your own words, your own path, your own opinion.
What about this compulsion to fix others or teach them what's right?
I have a strong, strong feeling and belief in this. Thank you, Swami. The only one I can fix is John. I can't fix anyone.
And only John Moore. No, yes. No other John.
Yes, right. And I have a problem enough with that. You know, that's why I'm always praying for grace. Because everybody in the world, if you look around, is trying to fix something over there.
Either a situation or a person.
Or they get upset because of something that's happening somewhere else or something somebody else said. Mm. And I can't fix anyone. Even Swami, when he gave these discourses, he told us that he could give us this guideline, but we're the ones that had to put it in practice. So I have this very strong feeling that we would have in the world, we would have utopia overnight if everybody in the world for just one day, one 24-hour period, would work in that 24 hours just to fix them, their own self. We'd have joy and bliss overnight. But everybody's trying to fix everything and anything besides themselves.
Now, you said when you came to Baba, you had a lot of anger in you.
Oh, yeah.
And only Baba can fix it. Now, that lesson, can you elaborate upon and share that experience with us, please?
Well, yes, only Swami could fix it because it's only with God's grace. But he gives us the grace so that we might look at our own self and how to interact with that. In my particular case, my background is I came from an all-mafia town in America.
Can you give us a bit of a background about yourself when you came here? Where all had you been, John?
Oh, that would take too long to say. You know, he's given me grace to do a lot of traveling to many, many places.
Mm-hmm. And where do you come from in America?
Well, now I'm living in California on a place called Mount Madonna, near the coast, south of San Francisco in the Santa Cruz Mountains. But I grew up in a place called Youngstown, Ohio, which is in middle America, which, like I said, was a mafia town. It was owned and run by the mafia. It was very polluted. It was the fifth largest steel producer. Actually, the river there caught on fire. They even made a song about one of the tributaries that goes into Lake Erie, and the song was called Burn On Big River. And there was a lot of drug problems, junkies and all this. And to get out of this environment, you see, I graduated from high school and knew I wasn't ready for college. So at that time, there was no thought of any kind of volunteer military there. It was a draft where you had compulsory service. And either you went in or you went to jail. So I knew I wasn't ready for college, so I thought I'll get this out of the way. So to get out of this mafia and polluted environment, I joined the Marines and consequently spent 2 years in Vietnam.
Which years were these?
I arrived in Vietnam on my 18th birthday in 1967, and I was there until near the end of 69. I was there for almost 2 years. And once I got out of the military, I went back to this environment in Youngstown, Ohio, and I got out again, and I was able to purchase some land. But all this time, I was blessed because things were coming to me all the time, you know, from Nityananda Baba and Ramakrishna Paramahansa and Yogananda.
And
even before that, when I was 15, I had gone to my uncle's in upstate New York, and I was working as a stock boy in this warehouse. And an older man I was working with, he said to me one day, he said, later on I'm going to a yoga class, would you like to go? And out of my mouth, before I could even think, I said, oh, I've already done enough of that, I don't need to do that. And
but you knew nothing about yoga, I'm guessing. Then.
Not in this lifetime, no. And things were coming out of my mouth that I didn't even know the meanings of, that I actually didn't learn the meanings of until I came here. One of the things was I would always be saying Om Tat Sat, and I didn't know the meaning of it until I arrived here and I met our dear brother who's here now, Professor Venkatesh, and he enlightened me as to the meaning. This Om Tat Sat means Om is the only thing of everlasting value. But many, many years before I knew the meaning, this was coming out of my mouth.
And what was your religious background in this life?
I grew up a Catholic. I was an altar boy. And I think this was a blessing from Swami because he actually ended up telling me that I'm Christian at one point. But in doing that, I loved all these things of Jesus and the Christ. Christ wasn't his last name. Christ means the anointed one. It's the same as what here in the East they call the Atma. And Christ is the spiritual part, the Holy Ghost, if you were. And this background I love so much of turn the other cheek and so many things. But when I came out of the church, people would be arguing about things in the parking lot, you know, about who's, you know, supposed to drive away first or, you know, yelling at their children. And it just didn't sit right with me. And so I kind of moved away from this. And as I moved away from this, I didn't see it at the time, only later on, that I also walked a little bit away from Jesus because of the people and the way they acted rather than looking at the teacher and the teachings. Which I think is a problem that we all have today is, you know, we listen to other people more than we listen to our own hearts. Mm-hmm. And so over the years, I saw that in this thing that's called religion, which man made religion, God made spirit to me. And in this thing called religion, there was all this confrontation of how the teachings were to be perceived or interacted with. One person says sit down, the other one says kneel down, the other one says bow down. And Swami said, there's only two things in the world that man argues or disagrees about, and that's name and form. We argue about what name to give God, or whether we're supposed to kneel down or pray standing up or bowing or whatever. That's the form. And so when I walked away from this because of these outer traipsings of people, and I was seeking, and I didn't have any words at the time. So I used things to myself, I'd say, God is love, and truth is his name. So I used to constantly pray to truth to learn about this love.
And this was in Vietnam as well?
Oh yeah, even before that.
What was it like to stay focused on God in the middle of the Vietnam situation?
Honestly, I didn't. I was living this other life that other people were telling me what to do, when to do it, how to do it, where to go. Even at that time, I guess it was a little lesson in being here now because I had to surrender to the moment because of these higher ranking officers and elders that I needed to listen to because in that structure, you had to follow orders.
Mm-hmm. But you said that you had all Yogananda, Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa all coming to you.
Yeah.
How did that happen in such a situation?
Well, books and, you know, like there was one captain who was there who did yoga, and I was able to talk to him some about these things and find out about a little bit. But it was mostly through books and just running into people, and this would come up in the conversation, and, you know, these names and teachings and other things would, you know, just come into my life.
Did you experience a sense of deja vu?
At times, yes, but not as you're asking it, no. There was nothing there except a hope and a promise for something better. Because, like, when I was in Vietnam, we never talked about going back to America. We talked about getting back to the world. because what we were living just didn't seem real. And so many of those things really didn't come into my thinking process because I just wanted to be done with where I was.
But didn't it scar you emotionally, and did you not carry any trauma with you later on? Because you speak of being in the now, how can you just shed that baggage from something as traumatic as the Vietnam situation and walk out of it and be in the next now without carrying some burden of the previous now?
Well, like I said, I didn't think much about spirituality when I was there. When I got done and got out and returned to America, I had a lot of baggage. That's what I said. You know, I had more anger than any 10-person put together. And that was due to carrying this stuff from yesterday. And, you know, man's inhumanity to man. And a lot of these things that the mind can't grasp. And people around me would begin to ask about these things. But when it came out with anger and what the actual war is, nobody wanted me to finish explaining that. So I came away, and for a while I was semi-suicidal, and, you know, I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress syndrome and just so many things like that. And really along the path, what really began to help, because I wasn't getting much help from the government and these government processes that were available, where I was getting the help was I was running into doing some meditation, and at that time I ran into Haridas Baba, who was one of the principal disciples of Neem Karoli Baba, and I was studying Ashtanga Yoga, and then I studied some meditation techniques with some Sikh people in Oregon, and I was working with American Indian Medicine Men and some of these things of living with the Earth Mother, and you know, it was just an unfolding that was really hard to describe because it was not so much I was seeking it, it was like it was seeking me and just putting these things in my life, but it was really up to me to drink and to put it like Swami says, you know, you can read all of his discourses and all of his teachings, but he says it's of no value, just pick one and put it into practice. So I felt blessed because this feeling disgruntled and disillusioned by these government and religious processes and thoughts probably motivated me to seek these things of love and truth and peace and beauty and wonder, where everybody else was trying to have me look like the Christians, for example. They teach that you need to see what's wrong in order to fix it. But they're preaching this so much they think that this is all there is. But it's only 50%. The other 50% is that we have to remember that even Christ told us that we are all the sons of God. We are all the same one. And so the other 50% is saying what's right with ourselves. And that I am basically a loving, caring, sharing human being that's trying to learn and grow. And as Swami showed me more of this, I told you, he physically told me that I was Christian. And one of the deeper insights that immediately, the epiphany that came to me through Swami with this was, Christians are always saying God is light. And they're talking, you know, like the sun or a light bulb or like this. And I found out that this is only 50% true as well. Because Swami showed me that, yes, I've seen light like the sun or some magnificent illumination. But most of the time, when I personally have tasted or felt or seen or interacted with God, it wasn't light like the sun. It was light like not heavy. And it's that lightness that's inside of us, because even in society, people are always saying, lighten up.
Lighten up, yes.
You know, what are they saying except be divine? You know, because that sensation of beauty and wonder, that love, when you taste that love, it isn't heavy. Heavy, to me, is in the mind when you're thinking and worrying and it weighs you down. But when you get in your heart with this love and truth and beauty and wonder and peace, there's a buoyancy, a lightness that happens within us that we fail to look at that because we can't hold it in our hand.
And I understand in your case, you had a physical experience when you were carrying a lot of anger in you and the lightening of that anger and the lightening from within occurred. Would you care to share it with us, please?
I'm blessed. I came here first time in 1974, and this occurrence happened that you were asking me to share happened about, oh, 4 or 5 years later. And when I first came, you see, my very first darshan, there was only about 20 people in darshan. And so as the years went by, as we're all aware, more people came. So by this trip, you know, more people had come. But at that time, at the time this story happened was, and I'm guessing, I'm not very good with chronology, but it was maybe 79 or 1980 or around there. And at that time, there was only one telephone in the village, which happened to be almost directly across from the Ganesh Gate when they had a post office, and that was the only phone in the village at the time. So I was trying for 3 days to make one phone call to my brother to have him send my money from the sale of a car to me. And for 3 days, I couldn't make this phone call. And at that time, like I said, I had so much anger. I was beyond anger on the third day, and I still couldn't make this one phone call. I was livid, way beyond regular anger. I mean, it was fall down, you know, ugliness. And so I couldn't make this call, and I realized at that moment that I better hurry off because I was going to be late for darshan. And I hurried off, and I was late for darshan, and I had to sit all the way in the back. And I joke a little bit about that, because I did. I had to sit all the way in the back, in the third line. And as I sat down, Swami was just finishing giving darshan and sharing darshan with the women's side, and was just coming to the men's side. This also has to do with the now, and also with the truth, because so many times we would go and we would put on a happy face for Swami, and we didn't give him the truth of that moment where we were having our worries or fears. That day, fortunately, I had the grace to be in the moment enough to share this great ugliness. Because when I sat down, like I said, all the way in the back in the third row, my prayer that day to Swami was, "Don't even look at me, Swami. I am so ugly." And I cursed in my mind, and I said, "Don't even look at me. I'm so ugly. I'm here. I need your darshan. I know I need your darshan. I don't know what darshan's all about, but I know I need it. But don't even look at me, because I'm so ugly." And this is the way my mind was repeating itself as Swami came down the line of men. And he didn't look at me. And as he got closer and closer, I felt a physical sensation on my shoulders, like somebody was behind me, touching my shoulders. And I turned around and angry to see who's bothering me. And no one was there. And I turned back around, and again this ugly prayer, this angry prayer came. And again this physical sensation happened, and I turned back to see who's there. You know, nobody there. So, and again, a third time this happened. And on the third time, I didn't turn around, but in my mind, I just screamed. I just said, "What? What do you want?" And again, nobody was there, but I felt this physical sensation as though somebody was grabbing a weight on my shoulders and lifting it up. And as it lifted, it got to about the top of my head level. And then it was like, it wasn't an audio thing, but it was like a pop where something was just gone. This weighty something was gone. And the next sensation I had was, again, a physical sensation of something being poured into the top of my head, like in my crown chakra. And I felt like this, it was like syrup or molasses or amrit coating being poured in my crown chakra and coating the whole inside of my body. And as this happened, I experienced this bliss beyond my wildest dreams, beyond my wildest imaginings. It was so beyond anything that I had ever even imagined possible. And its beauty was just so huge that I was overtaken. And as Swami says, they're not tears, they're prema drops. Prema drops rained down my face. And I was in so much bliss, I couldn't understand. I felt like I could float away. And Swami still hadn't looked at me. And he was walking down the line. And I knew, in my heart of hearts, I knew that he had done this. And I knew also in that moment, it was because that I didn't hide from him. That even with this ugliness, I didn't want him to look at me, because I didn't want him to look at this ugliness. But I knew that because I had given the truth of that in that moment, is why he responded. And he got further down the way, And when he got just in front of me, the man in front of me stood up. And, of course, he hid Swami from my view. And I have to admit that my very first sensation was to grab the back of the man's pants in front of me and drag him to the floor. But as thoughts happen so quick, immediately I thought to myself, no, John, you've just been given a gift, a blessing, a grace so far beyond your wildest dreams and your wildest imaginings. Just let this man have his time with Swami. And just as I had this thought, Swami leaned around the side of this man and showed me his face, and a big smile appeared. And then he hid himself again, and he didn't look at me the rest of the darshan. And I really, really feel that this happened only because in the years preceding this, when I'd go to darshan, you know, I didn't want to give this, but I'd always put on this face of happiness and joy. And, you know, I like to say that you can't fake surrender. Swami will always bust you. And I felt that this happened because I was living now fully in the truth of, like I said, I used to pray to truth to learn about love. And I'd travel all this way, and who did I meet but Satya?
So when you came to Baba, as I'm reckoning from your description, about 5 years after the Vietnam War, you must have had some physical interactions with him. What were the learnings there?
Well, I tell you, there was a few learnings as soon as I arrived. The first thing that happened, even before I met Satyasai, I walked in the Ganesha gate, and I have to say, because I find it both humorous and sad, I walked in the gate, and in those days, you see, Ganesh wasn't in jail. He just sat on this dais,
yes,
and he was open to the world.
Yes.
And the first thing I saw was this Ganesh, and because I had been many, many months traveling without not one rupee in India, I saw that the beggars and the poorest of the poor threw their last paisa to Ganesh, hoping for some kind of help.
Mm.
And when I first saw this, I had a sad thought, and I thought, oh no. Because I remembered back to the Christian world, where they always had their hand out and the basket out, asking for money for something. And I thought, well, I'm here in the middle of the desert, and in those days very hard to get here. I thought, well, I can always leave. So go inside. And as I walked up to Ganesh, I was very thankful. In those days, not only was he sitting on this dais of beauty and wonder to the world, there was just a little tiny fence around where he sits. And on that fence in those days, there was a sign. And the sign was written in 5 different languages. And the sign said, "Your money is not appreciated here in like or kind." And I began to cry, and these prema drops came down, because it was the first time in my life that I ever went somewhere to learn about God and love and truth, where right in front they said, this isn't about money and things, it's about the love. So when this happened, a guy whose name turned out to be Guy came up to me and showed me where to put my bags in the one shed at that time, and he said, "Quick, we'll be late for darshan." And I said, "What's a darshan?" And so he explained to me, and he led me over. And as we got to just by the mandir, where the parking garage is now, there was no wall at that time, very little thing, and we just stepped into the sand. And as we sat down, Swami, we had just come to the men, and we were sitting on the side of the building. I didn't even know there was ladies at darshan. And there was only about 20 men there. And Swami was at the other end of the line, and each and every single man he came to, he made this circular motion with his hand and was giving them something. Now, about 2 weeks before this, I had met a man who said, "Go see Sai Baba if you don't have money and if you don't have plane ticket." And he made this circular motion with his hands. He said, "And he can give you one." And I made the same circular motion with my hand, and I said, "If he can give me one, that's not what I want." Because I'd never heard his name when I came. I had come because I had my heartstrings pulled so strongly. But the message that I got was, go and find your Satguru.
Where were you coming from? Which part of India?
That's kind of a long story.
Okay.
Maybe for another time. But
sure.
I had spent time in the Himalayas and in Varanasi, and made my way south and studied with different gurus along the way, including lastly with Swami Chimayananda in Madras, and finally ended up coming this side.
Mm-hmm.
But as to your question again, the earliest lessons, I had come, and as I sat for this first darshan, and I saw what this man had said, you know, the circular movement of the hand, and he can give you a plane ticket. When I saw Swami giving something, that particular day, he made a new circular movement in front of each, specifically each individual man. It wasn't like one time and then down the line, like so many times he would give Vibhuti that way. But each man, he was making this movement. And as I saw this, my very, very first internal silent prayer was, no trinkets. I don't want some little thing. I don't care what you're giving these people. I don't want it. I am looking for Sadhguru. And if you are who I hope you might be, then don't give me some trinket. I want to know who I am. I want to know the truth about this love that I've been praying about. And as he came down the line, every single man he stopped in front of and materialized something. And to this day, I still don't know. I have no idea what he was giving them. And I was last in line. And he stopped in front of me and just stopped and just looked me in the eye. It must have been, I don't know how long, it's one of those magical Swami moments where you don't know, it could have been 5 seconds or 5 minutes, and he just looked me in the eye, and it was just this presence. And then he turned and walked away, and I started crying because he didn't circle his hand, he didn't give me anything, only this look. So that was my first inclination that maybe he heard my prayer, or something in the divine heard my prayer.
What was Baba's physical appearance like? He must have been barely 50 at that time.
Oh, yeah.
What do you remember?
I just remember a presence, more than a physical what he looked like.
You felt a connection when he looked at you?
Yes, definitely. To describe that is beyond words. There's no way that I can, you know, anybody who's been blessed to be given one of these looks from Swami, a direct eye contact to eye contact that lasts for a while, there's no way to describe it. It's otherworldly. It's nothing to do with time or of this physical. And so I really didn't even connect with his physical appearance so much. But to kind of finish that, what I got first, after some few days, he called me for an interview. And in that interview, he called me into the private room, and you were asking about insights and what he gave me as lessons. And this is probably one of the most profound and deeply felt, and for me, the one I carry the longest. In this inner interview room, I can tell you that he told me many things. After the interview, I don't remember anything we talked about, except one thing. Right at the very end of my time in the private room, he and I were standing like little kids with our elbows leaning against the wall, and he was maybe as close as this microphone that's in front of me, and our eyes were at the same level, and he was looking at me. And at that moment, he said this. He said, remember, you are in the light. The light is in you. You are the light. Remember. To me, this is the essence of all the teachings that he gives. It's for me, I put it in a different mantra that I use for myself that I made up is Sat Nam Sai Ram Soham. Sat Nam means I prostrate or bow down to the truth. Sai Ram, he's the very embodiment of Satya, the truth. And what he told me to remember is Soham. I am that.
So which light? The light, bright light, or the light, not heavy light?
The whole question, yes. Potato or potato. It doesn't matter what word you use, whether you see it as an illumination like the sun, or whether you taste it and experience it as a buoyancy of inner lightness.
Mm-hmm.
It's both and neither. That's the trick. It's because all words, even the word God, has to be given up. Swami told me one time, because I was having doubts, and I asked him about doubts, and he said, many things of the spiritual path, the mind of man is not meant to understand. You can be love, but you cannot understand it. And man strives so much to put things into words so that he can communicate on an outward level. But as we have the saying in the United States, we try to talk it over, but the words got in the way. Like these words like I, and we think of this as an interpersonal, ego-centric I meaning John. But when Swami talks about this, he means the I as the same as self and self. There's myself, John, and there's my self, which is the Atma. And I think that going beyond the words is the most difficult thing that we need to do, because we want to put it into brackets with words. But everything, the very last discourse that I was personally at with Swami happened in Vrindavan. And in that discourse, it was impromptu. He came that day for darshan and said no darshan, and he asked for the lectern to be brought. And I found it very, very unusual. But he came that day and he asked for the lectern.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it was most unusual. And that day, I'll never forget it though, because unlike any other discourse I was ever at, he did not start with one of these song chants.
Okay.
And he did not say what he always says, Premasurapala or Atmasurapala, which in my opinion is all you need. You don't need all the discourses if you just look at the inner meaning of that, what he says. But he didn't use this Premasurapala. He started this impromptu discourse by saying, all of your work, your meditation, your pujas, your sevas, they're all worthless. They are worthless until you know and remember one thing. And then he pointed out with his finger out at the people gathered there, and he said, I, pointing around the darshan area. And then he took a second, and then he pointed at his own chest, and he said, I, know this I, and you will answer all that you need to know. Well, in Christianity, you see, when Moses went to the burning bush,
mm-hmm.
and he says, how will I tell the people? What name shall I give? And the response that he got was, I am. And then when he asked again, because he didn't understand, this divine voice said, tell them I am that I am. Humans want to put it in some definition. But this I am, like Ramana Maharshi said, you know, so many of the saints pointed to the same thing, whether you call it Atma, or I am, or Premasurapala, or Christ, or Allah, it's this presence that happens between peoples that has the value. It's not the description that it's given that people are so enamored to get right. And that's why there's so much falling out between different people within religion. Because, like, the Christian background I come from, you know, the Catholics say theirs is the only way, the Protestants say theirs is the only way, and the Seventh-day Adventists say theirs is the... And each, if you look at each different religion, each one of them has their discrepancies between word value. But when you come back to it, it's like Swami said, see the unity in the diversity. Celebrate the diversity in the many ways, the names and forms that God can show himself, but see how they're the same. They're the same in this presence of I am-ness, of beingness, of is-ness, of Atma, of Christ, of Spirit. But they're different in the way that they're expressed. Just as, is this, as I hold in my hand this cup, is this pani, or niro, or ulu, or vasar, or water? Drink it. It quenches your thirst.
Regardless of what name you call it.
Exactly. So this is what Swami keeps trying to point out. And as I said to you earlier, it comes back to that thing of the guru tells us the way. When will I believe him enough to put it into practice? That's what it comes back to. So for me, people see me and I usually have a smile these days because Swami has blessed me, but only because I listen to him. Sai Baba, Satya Sai Baba, my Satguru. That's how I came to him, as Satguru. I didn't know about this avatar and all these things people talk about. But my Satguru stood in front of me, and he looked me in the eye and he said, be happy. And most people take this to be some poem or metaphor, and I took it as an order. This is how you're to live your life.
By being happy, John Moore is happy.
That's, no, and more, you know, I'm finding that that's not true.
How because, do you mean?
Well, because happy and sad and high and low is a roller coaster. And more, I find I'm not happy. I'm in bliss. Because Swami says the highest joy is contentment,
mm-hmm.
which is a level, balanced progression of isness. Whereas happy is the opposite of sad, high and low, good and bad. And that's something that more and more I, for myself, perceive as of the mind. This is to be honored because it's the human part. And the human part needs to be that which God put it here for. To have feelings, emotions, thoughts, interactions. But to realize that I am not that. Like when Swami left his body, he blessed me greatly. But I had what I described as a hole here in my chest area. And I didn't know how to have a word for it. And when I was here at the time of the Mahasamadhi unveiling, the shrine unveiling, I was so blessed to spend a little time with dear sister Moya, one of the pink sisters from Australia. And as we were talking, she was talking about feeling guilty. And I said, Moya, why? And she said, because... She says, I feel guilty, even though he held my hand for a half an hour after my sister left her body, and I know that he's in my heart, and I know we're all one. She says, I feel guilty because I feel sad. And in that instant, I knew that this big hole that I was feeling in my chest, this was sad. But at that same instant, I knew that sad's not bad. It's just the human part of what I'm experiencing. But I'm not that. Because as Moya and I both started to giggle like little children, because we both realized that we are this presence of contentment, Swami says, this is the highest joy. Just accepting what is because it is. But the human part still needs to feel these things of right and wrong and high and low and sadness and joy. But I need to let John experience that and know that I am this, as Swami says, this love, this prema, because prema doesn't mean love, it means divine love, Atma Surupala, that I am this Atma, this Christ, this Holy Ghost, if you will, that is a presence as what happens in satsang. And as people have satsang, there isn't an understanding that happens. There's this thing of, it's the only way I can put it in words, it's a knowing that happens, where you're all on the same page, you all are tasting this moment. And that's that presence of God and love that shows us our oneness. This is the divine that happens in satsang. It isn't an understanding of the mind that says, oh, I agree with you or I disagree with you. It's just this presence that happens that just says, And more than that, I think, you know, that people put too much reliance on the words. You have a saying here in India. It's in Sanskrit. And it goes, Gate, gate, paragate, parasamgate, bodhisvaha. And it's talking about the journey of God, to God, using the mind. And what it means is, gone, gone, gone beyond, gone beyond the beyond. Hail the one who goes. Which means going even beyond that concept of the word God. Because even Swami's discourses, I'm so blessed to have heard so many, but even these discourses are at the very, very, very best only a signpost. They show us which direction we can walk if we want and we choose to go. But they're only showing us. We're the ones that actually have to do it. As I said earlier, if everybody in the world just fixed themselves or put one thing into practice or looked toward this presence rather than a definition of the presence, there'd be bliss everywhere, and I see bliss everywhere.
Now, John, yours is an unusual story. A Catholic raised in America in a rough town like Youngstown, Ohio. A Vietnam War veteran. A seeker who's traveled through the Himalayas, who's done his meditation, met with the masters, been through Varanasi, Madras and everywhere. And finally come to the lotus feet of your Sadhguru. There is a question on a lot of people's minds. Perhaps you have a lesson that you can share to answer it, that after the transition from the physical to the infinite, after Baba left the body, people feel a great sense to still connect with him.
Yes.
And that's creating a confusion because not everybody's confident about their own inner connection or their ability to connect with Him, and then they're depending on other props.
Yes.
Where do you stand on this?
Well, again, to me, that's the human part that seeks these props, as you said. For me, I share one day in my life, two darshans, very short story. Morning darshan, when Swami was still in His body, I was sitting toward the back of the hall, and all these people stood up, and I couldn't get darshan. And the people behind me, I felt sorry for, they couldn't also get darshan and see Swami. And I was blessed in that moment to say, Swami, what's the spiritual significance behind this, the reason behind this? And immediately He came inside, and it was as though we were talking as you and I are talking now. And I heard inside, and He said, oh, foolish man, I have told you for years and years, I am the love in each and every one of these people who are standing in front of you. See me in them and take my darshan. And I was filled, and I began to cry at the beauty of this teaching. In the afternoon time, the same day, same thing happened, and all these people stood up. And again I asked, Swami, what is the purpose, spiritual reason behind this? And again He said, immediately came inside of me, and I heard His voice just like we're talking now. And He said, I've brought you for so many years. You've been blessed with so many of my darshan. The man standing directly in front of you, this is his first and only darshan this lifetime. Let him have me. It humbled me. I think in this time since Swami has left His body, the greatest thing that I have been given is the words of the Guru. Each day we sing Aarti twice a day. Swami's very first bhajan that He wrote, in both of these, He wrote and put there Himself. And it says Omkaram Baba. It means, I am the form of Om. Put Om in my hand. You can't do it. It's this energy, this presence. If we look to this presence, I tell you the truth. He still comes for every darshan. I tell you the truth. You don't have to leave your home in America or Russia or India or Italy or France or Canada or anywhere else. If you look to this which Swami, your Satguru, told you to look at, this love in your very heart. He says, as I point out toward this ashram that we're sitting in, this isn't Prashanti Nilayam. Prashanti Nilayam is in your own heart. It comes back to, when will we believe what the Guru says? You see, each day that goes by for me, I tell people, well, they ask, why are you always smiling? I said, well, it's simple for me. I can either listen to John, or I can listen to the Guru. And John wants all these answers. And the Guru that's in the heart is this presence. It's not something you can hold in your hand. And this is one of the problems, especially in this day and age. We want a God we can hold in our hand. We want that Padmanabhaskar. I have to admit, you know, I can't miss Swami because I feel this love even this second. But John, this human part of me, I miss His face. Mm-hmm. I miss these beautiful hand mudras and the way He used to float across the darshan area. I miss these little brown feet. But that's especially today. I believe, this is my personal belief, no one else's, that He left His body when He did because we weren't listening. For all these years He said, see me as the love in others. See me as the love in your very heart. I am the form of Om, this presence, this being. And we still wanted to give the letter, and we kept it for months and months, and it got ragged and tattered because this physical thing we needed Him to take. We wanted the interview. We wanted to touch His feet. We wanted the prasad after. We wanted to see Him walk. And this is all good, but is it what the Guru said? Each must choose.
John, you said that Prashanti Nilayam is not just this place. Yeah. It's in your heart, and you don't need to leave your country or Canada or France or wherever and experience it within you. Now, if that is so, why are you here from America?
The easiest way that I can answer that, some will understand and some will not understand. There's a thing that happens with me in my way that I can express it in words, is I get my heartstrings pulled. And in a more general way, I think many of us come here, including myself, because in all of our home places, we're circled by people who, many of them don't even know there is a path.
Or there is a God.
Or that there is a God. And because of this, we are surrounded by people that are constantly talking to us about out there in the world and the problems and all these things. So I come here because for me, not only do I know that Swami still comes for every darshan, and I feel him, especially at Veda time when nobody goes, but I come here because of this thing I shared earlier. The word is satsang. And in my home place and in most of our home place, we're circled by all these people that are talking about the worries and fears and the problems of the world. This is one of the few places in the world you can come to, and whether it's inside this ashram or out in the village, you get stopped all the time of people who want to talk, actively talk about beauty and love and truth and caring and sharing and all these things of the heart. This satsang, which then is a generative thing, which then gives us energy to take that moment to look inside. Where in our home place, because they're so involved with everything outside ourselves, we get so run down. Another metaphor of mine is I tell people, please, have the strength. Never, never, never let anyone take you from your heart into their head. Rather, take them from their head and their mind space into your heart and love them. I had a friend here recently who many people come to for help for certain things. And they come to him and they're frayed and ragged. And I said this to him one day and he says, oh, that's not a problem. He says, when they first come in and I see their agitation, he says, I just quickly make them a cup of tea and start talking about the tea. And it immediately takes them out of where they're currently stuck to this now of interacting with the tea. And it allows that peace to happen. And coming here to this place of Prashanti and India in general, there's more likelihood for many of us to find this thing of satsang and talking about the beauty and love and truth. And that's why I come. Because it's, in metaphor, it's a battery recharge. Because if I don't have peace and somebody comes to me looking for it, I can't give them any. So first, you must heal yourself and heal your leg before you try to carry someone across that river, you know.
So John, I know you have such wonderful wisdom to share, but one final life lesson that Baba has taught you, which has now become a mantra for your life.
Thank you, Baba.
Gratitude?
Gratitude I learned early. I think I got it first from Swami Vivekananda.
Mm-hmm.
You see, to me, the two things that are most definitely part of this, like I said, the word for me is celebrate. Celebrate everything. As a saint one time prayed and he says, my God, you're so beautiful, for you always give me whatsoever I need. And one of his followers heard him and said, but here, we're cold and we're tired and we're hungry and we're rejected by the town with wild animals all around and you pray like this? And he said, yes, it must be a need for my spiritual growth, or why would he give it to me? So for me, the two things that are most relevant to me are gratitude and this thing of joy. Swami said, be happy. That means acceptance and surrender. And this gratitude is, for me, I feel so inadequate because people say, even Swami has said, don't say thank you because would you thank the mother? And I'm sorry, it's the only thing I can do, because when I think I'm truthful with myself, the only thing I really have to offer him is love. But he gave me that first, so I have to be grateful. And then as my guru, he said, be happy. It's not be happy if you get to go to the celebration or get to go. No, be happy with whatever he gives you, because it's part of that unfolding to allow each of us to see more who we really are. As Swami has said, you're three people, the one others see you as, the one you see yourself as, and the one you really are. Which is this presence. It's not this body, because as Ramana taught, you know, first you must answer this one question, who am I? And you start first tapping the body, say, oh, this is my... But then you hear yourself and you say, oh, it's my body. Who is this my, this I that claims it? And then we tap the head and we say, oh, but it's my brain, my mind, my thoughts. Who is this? Who is this I? And when we finally allow the blessings of the guru to come through and believe what he's telling us, more and more we begin to see and accept that I am God. I am not different from God. I am the indivisible supreme absolute. I am Satchit Ananda, being awareness bliss. Fear and anxiety cannot affect me, for I am God. Or the mantra that I've been carrying for 50 years now that was given to me so many years ago. And it's in English and it goes, I am the pure light of consciousness, penetrating everywhere and bringing all into the light of God. In the Western canteen here, Swami had written there for so many years, and it said, so you think, so you become, so always think, I am God. Again, when will we believe the guru more than what others say and more than what even my mind tells me? And the guru says, and he points to each of us, saying there's no difference between us. The guru said, God himself said, there's no difference except I know and I believe. You're trying to remember. And then Swami says, but don't try. Do it. Just do it. So when will we? And for me, that comes with these life lessons of these two things. Be happy and thank you, Lord, for everything that you give, whether it's darshan or clean the toilet. And to accept it as a spiritual lesson. And in that moment, what is the spiritual lesson? That can only be answered in that particular now that we're supposed to learn what spiritual lesson. But we can't do that without first this surrender and acceptance of each moment in life being his gift to us, his lesson to us. And instead of struggling with it, celebrate and accept what he's given us. And for me, it just is so much easier to listen to the guru than to listen to John, that I'm a lazy man, and if he wants to do everything, I'll let him.
Wow, that's really, really quite riveting. And on that very happy and grateful note, I want to just say, on behalf of all the listeners who are going to hear this conversation in time to come, John Moore, thank you. And Jai Sai Ram.
And all I can say is, thank you, Baba.
Sai Ram, John.
Om Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, you just heard an episode of our occasional series, Learning with Love. Learning with Love is a variant of our Tryst with Divinity conversations with the value-added component, making it Tryst with a Twist. In these interviews, Baba's devotees from around the world speak of the lessons they have learned from their association with Baba, and in sharing these lessons, they bring to life some of the experiences that delivered what are now their mantras for life. Sharing his Learning with Love today was Mr. John Moore of Santa Cruz Mountains, California, USA. This episode of Learning with Love was recorded at the Radio Sai Studios in Prashanthi Nilayam on January the 9th, 2015. We sure hope you learned from Mr. Moore's learning. Please share your thoughts, comments and suggestions by email at listener@radiosai.org. Thank you for your company, and Sai Ram from Prashanthi Nilayam. The 90th year of Bhagwan Baba's divine advent is here. What are you planning to offer at his lotus feet? How about a gift wrapped in red? If you wish to partner with the Sai Healthcare to save a precious life, please take the time to donate blood at the Sri Sathya Sai Super Specialty Hospital whenever you are visiting Puttaparthi. The blood bank is open Monday through Saturday, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Every single day, patients undergo life-saving procedures here, and a pint of blood can make all the difference. Let's build a favorable blood inventory. If you're a healthy adult, please donate. For more information, please visit psg.sssihms.org.in. Blood, it's in you to give. Please donate. Sai Ram.
to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Salam, dear listeners, welcome back to Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, where the time right now is 48 minutes past 10 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time. Today is the 25th of June 2015, and it's an easy breezy morning here in Prashanthi Nilayam. Current temperature outside the Radio Sai studios is 28 degrees Celsius, and the sky is blue and clear, and beautiful, of course, dotted with a few clouds. These days, we have a spurt of monsoon showers sometime in the afternoons. And with the gentle breeze blowing, Prashanthi is very pleasant. And, of course, very inviting. I know you get the hint by now. And now, dear brothers and sisters, it's time for a friendly and gentle reminder from Sri Aurobindo Ghosh, one of my favorite philosophers, about the mind and its immobility. He says, "There is nothing mind can do that cannot be done better in the mind's immobility and thought-free stillness. When the mind is still, then truth gets her chance to be heard in the purity of the silence." Unquote, Sri Aurobindo. Moving along, it is now time for me to treat you to the 90th birthday theme audio that we have created and offered at the Lotus Feet to mark this special year, the 90th year of the divine advent of our Lord. But before I play this file, may I bid you Sai Ram and wish you a saisome awesome day ahead. May all that you do, think and speak be inspired by our beloved Bhagwan. May he hold your hand all the way, step by step, through this day, so that everything that you and I do is worthy of being offered at his lotus feet. After this short musical rendition, Professor G. Venkatraman will sign in with his musing series. And here is a gentle and familiar reminder to please email us your feedback to today's episode of Morning Glory. Our email ID remains listener@radiosai.org. Please enjoy the rest of the show and Jai Sai Ram.
Prema Swarup Lara.
Happy, 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 be happy. Happy, happy, make others happy. All will be happy, God will be happy.
Jai Swaraya Vidmahe.
Somebody's with you wherever you go.
To thee.